No matter where you live in the world, you're subject to authorities that tend to abuse their power. Through taxation, legislation, or outright tyranny, every one of us faces consequences based on our nationality. Andrew Henderson started Nomad Capitalist as a means of determining which countries treat its citizens the best, providing the most fertile grounds for living a life free of government interference and undue tax burdens. Today, Andrew joins us to share his insights on the state of the world and where those who seek to maximize their liberty would be most welcome. In the Republic of Bad Cryptopia, we treat everyone well. There's no taxation, and the only law is that you stay bad. So we welcome you to join us and Andrew in our crypto utopia on episode number 721 of the Bad Crypto Podcast.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition.
Who's bad? Yes, in the Republic of Bad Cryptopia, we are a benevolent dictatorship, which means we make the rules, but there really aren't any, so...
I'm more of a benevolent dick. He's more of a tater. Yeah. He loves potatoes.
I do. It's true.
Au gratin. Hey, so this is actually episode one of the Almost Okay Crypto Podcast.
Oh, we're starting over? Is this a reboot?
And you know what? Never mind. Let's not do that.
I'm too old for a reboot, Dave.
Hey, just everybody just know we're almost okay, though, now. After 720-something episodes, finally... getting okay, decent.
I don't know, might need to take a vote on that, but I'll tell you what, our guest today is
we're benevolent dictators. We can say when we're good or not.
Okay,
dick.
This guest is more than okay. He's awesome. We've been wanting to speak with Andrew from Nomad Capitalist for a couple of years now, and finally the stars aligned. Might have had something to do with the eclipse. I don't know. And
he's had to wait for an eclipse for him to come on the show.
How it crazy took total darkness for him to see the light.
You guys are so bad. Wait, you know what? If the sun goes dark in the middle of the day, then maybe I'll come on your show.
Yeah. And there he was. And here he is. Let's listen in with Andrew Henderson. Being a nomad capitalist refers to a philosophy and a company focused on the idea of go where you're treated best. This involves leveraging global opportunities to increase your personal freedom, protect your wealth, and enhance your lifestyle. Founded by Andrew Henderson, the company provides services that help people with things like offshore banking, second citizenships, tax strategies, investments for high net worth individuals. And the concept is about utilizing international strategies to legally reduce taxes, diversify your investments, and gain additional freedoms through multiple residencies or citizenships. It's a lifestyle and it's a strategy embraced by digital nomads, entrepreneurs, investors, anybody that wants to optimize their legal and financial standing globally. And we are pleased to have with us the chief operating officer and the head janitor at Nomad Capitalist, Andrew Henderson. Andrew, welcome.
So sometimes they only let me do the second one. They just kind of push me out of the way, but it's good to be with you.
Yeah, actually, you stepped back for a while because we had reached out like a couple of years ago to have you on the show, and your people are like, oh, he's not doing videos anymore. But now I see you're back with a vengeance. Yeah. So what happened? What was that whole in-between period, your blue period?
I somebody probably didn't get the memo. I don't know. No, I mean, we've been really busy. So, I mean, you grow a business. And there was probably a time back in like 2021, I mean, we couldn't think straight. There were times back when I talked to all the clients. I mean, I think I had 2 14-hour days just of talking to folks, let alone coordinating the actual work, let alone running things. So, you know, as time's gone on, I think that I like to be a guy who leads by example. I could do pretty much every job at my company. I have done a good number of the jobs at the company. And probably didn't let go soon enough of some of them. So we've got a really great trusted team. Obviously, nobody, you know, you never have 100% success. But there was probably a time a couple of years ago when things were just going so crazy and crypto was on fire and COVID was in the middle of everybody being locked out and locked down. And it was terrible. And we just said, hey, I mean, you know, we got to prioritize the business. And so, you know, for me, being an entrepreneur is how do you fire yourself from jobs? But because our business is so unique, I mean, we hire people. We half of our staff, there's no such job anywhere in the world, I don't think. We do things. I just invented systems for how we run our event, how we serve the client, like how we make the plans. Like there's nothing else like it. And so I'm not a guy who likes to let go too soon. Maybe took me too long, but I didn't want to let go too soon. And the result, I guess, is some of this stuff suffered.
Yeah. So let's maybe take it back for the folks who maybe aren't familiar with what you're doing over there at Nomad Capitalist. So,
Yeah.
you know, what motivated you to start this and to maybe dedicate your career to helping people go where they're treated best? And I want to say this, a friend of mine said to me, he said, go where you're celebrated, not where you're tolerated.
Yeah.
And so was there maybe a specific experience or realization that helped inspire this mission?
My father told me that. I don't think he realized it would be such a big thing. My father's now spending half his year in Mexico, down in a community with a lot of expats, and a lot of the expats are like Nomad Capitalists, and they say we're here because of Nomad Capitalists. But he told me, this is about 27 years ago now, you don't think you have to stay in this country, in the United States, just because your parents are here. You ought to go where you're treated best. And I think that was pretty progressive. A lot of the parents that my friends had were like, you got to stay in Ohio. What are we going to do when we get old? My parents didn't believe in that. I'm sure I don't agree with my parents on everything, but they gave me that permission slip. You should do what's best for you. You should crash through the dogmas. And so the business Nomadic Capitalist is a result of me blogging and researching and traveling all around the world to figure out how this stuff really works. Because I didn't think anybody was talking about offshore strategies or second citizenship in a way that wasn't kind of sketchy. Like that when I got into this, there was a lot of guys in Panama and they didn't tell you their real name. And it's like call this Skype number and send the money like, you know, in an envelope. And I'm like, there's gotta be a better way to do this. I'll put my face on it. I'll put my real name on it. I'll be the what I eventually someone called me the goody two shoes of the business. There's a need for that because normal people like us, we don't want to call, we don't want to send an envelope to Panama, but we want the lower taxes. We want the second citizenship. We want the freedom. And I thought there was an opening.
I love the idea of crashing through the dogmas. You know, so many people just automatically take on the faith of their parents. They don't question why they believe what they believe. They take on the voting patterns. You know, imagine waking up, as a Democrat in 2024 and going, wait, my parents voted. This isn't what they came up with. And certainly, you know, growing up in a nation, you think that, wow, we're the best. And then you start to realize, well, you know, maybe the US might still be the best, but boy, we're sure working on not being the best. And there are a lot of places to go that will treat you better, especially as an entrepreneur or as a high net worth individual, right?
Well, how many Germans? How many Norwegians? How many people from Brunei? How many people from Sweden? How many of them are moving to the US? And so they look at it and say, oh, these Americans, they think they're number one. They're like, yeah, you guys have this, you got that, you got this. You know, it's really hard. Self-awareness is a big thing for me. And living overseas has enhanced that process because you're forced to see the friction of different cultures around you. It causes a, you know, self-awareness. But, you know, it's very hard to judge ourselves and it's very hard to judge where we're from because we have these dogmas. We want to think we're the best. You know, the ego to think that like you're born in the place that's number one in everything. Let's go through the statistics. The United States isn't even the most obese country anymore. You lost that. And
To
now
who? Wait, to who? Mexico?
Mexico is more obese. And there's like Palau and some of those little islands with 12,000 people. But I believe Mexico is now more obese. And I love nobody loves Mexico more than I do. But it is. We've actually got the president of Mexico coming to speak to some of our clients in a couple of months, but the former president. But you know, number one in prisoners per capita. That's about it. We just did the Nomad Passport Index. It was everywhere, and 44th. When you go through the actual numbers, 44th in terms of travel, in terms of taxation, in terms of reputation, how were you perceived, all that kind of stuff. Can you get residence permits? Can you live? 44th best passport. Hey, out of
Wow.
almost 200, out of almost 200, like, you know, people have this thing. He hates the US. Like, whatever. I'm telling the facts.
You're being
The facts
objective.
are the fa right. When you're objective, and again, you can be objective. Go to the guy in Sweden. Hey, do you think the US is the best country in the world? No, I don't. Okay. Well, so apparently the only people who believe it's the best country in the world already live there. How serendipitous is that? And a couple guys in Pakistan or something that just want to get out. But I just think that we have to just understand objectively where we are. And my philosophy would be, listen, I have passports that aren't the best passports. Added up, they give me a lot of freedom. I'm not dependent on one country. But I wouldn't bank in those countries, or I wouldn't buy a house in those countries. We want to be diversified because the best place to, be taxed on your crypto may not be the best place to have a citizenship. So you want to kind of pick from the buffet. But it's humbling to see that the country you're from is probably winning in nothing good.
That's hilarious, but at least I don't have an Afghanistan passport,
That's towards the bottom, yeah.
which is the number one, which is surprising to me. I would think North Korean passport would probably be the worst since you can't actually leave very often, it would seem.
Isn't that the highest prisoner per capita right there in North Korea, right? Like
Wow.
everybody is a prisoner.
Well, something like that, yeah. Listen, you could go through. I mean, people talk about disinformation in Russia or what have you. You think people in the United States are really much better educated about what's happening in the world? Do you think they really don't just buy whatever's
No.
now? Listen, what's happening with TikTok, right? I mean, people are saying, well, part of the narrative is that the younger generation's on TikTok and they're looking, hey, this pro-Israel message. Listen, I don't know, but they're saying that may be why the U.S. government's against TikTok, is they're letting that alternate message, pro-Gaza, spread. So I think you're seeing it somewhat change. And that may be good, it may be bad, I don't know. But this idea that there's just certain dogmas in every country and you just agree with it, but somehow, you're not like the Russians, you're not like the Chinese, you're free. You can be free to some extent, but I think the U.S. is becoming much less free.
Yeah, and according to your score, it's only a 30, right? Instead of, so it's kind of middle of the road when it comes to freedom, when we should be a blatant 50. But over time, that's gone away. And let me ask this because, a vast percentage of our Congress and senators have dual passports with Israel. And it would seem to me that if you're a congressman or a senator, you want allegiance to only one country. And it's so weird to see such, I don't know what is like 70% or something crazy of like that have dual passports with Israel. What are your thoughts maybe on dual passports overall and maybe how that works in America? Because I don't know how dual passports work in America.
I haven't heard that. I don't know if that seems extraordinarily high, but I would say, I'm a believer in dual citizenship. Now, I've never wanted to be a politician. I never wanted to work in government. We have had a few people who have security clearances they can't get, or they still have, or they did have, whatever. They can't get a second passport. I think that's a big problem, because what if your country wants to tax you? The U.S. already does worldwide. There's ways you can reduce it, but if you're in crypto and you're an investor, it's a lot harder. Right, that's why we
Puerto
talked about Puerto Rico
Rico.
offline. Yeah, Puerto Rico. Listen, that's great if you've got a family and you're already married and that's already set up. Good luck if you're going overseas getting your Colombian, your Indonesian, or your Belarusian chica to come and live with you in Puerto Rico. You're gonna be on your own.
I would
So,
agree with that because I could not get my Russian girl to come to Puerto Rico because
no,
it's so easy
yeah.
to come to America illegally. It's nearly impossible to come to America legally. I have a friend
There's
from Philippines that was trying to come over and nope, couldn't get past the process to even
they're
fly to
nasty.
America.
And listen, I'm sitting here in Dublin, Ireland right now. I spend some time here these days, and people say, oh, that's Western, and they're doing some of the same stuff. But you know what? There's not nearly the bureaucracy. Somebody got a residence permit here in under 60 days. Meanwhile, there's people under certain categories of legal immigration in the US where they're going into the embassy right now. They made that appointment in 1999.
Wow.
Sounds like a system you want to improve. Listen, if you're in crypto, it's harder to go somewhere else as an American. If you're not an American, it's still easier. But you see Australia kind of making moves, saying if you don't live overseas as an expat the way that we like, maybe we'll claim you as a taxpayer. It's getting dangerous. And so if you can't hold more than one passport, I think you're going to be in trouble. I think you're going to see some of these big countries. Like a US where the freedom's going in the wrong direction, they're angry that they're losing all the power they had. You think they're not going to try and come after crypto? I know we're all smarter than the government, but they've got billions of dollars to spend and all the guns. I'd rather just sleep at night being like, hey, I'm Saint Lucian, I'm this, I'm that. They're not going to bother me. But as to the politicians, you know, the politicians do a lot of things. The politicians are trading. The politicians are doing a lot of stuff. I mean, I remember, you know, my grandmother would say back in the day, you'd be a congressman. You'd go from your town. You'd go from your farm. You'd serve for 4 or 6 years. You'd do your job and you'd go home. It's not how it works anymore. Mm-hmm. And they're career politicians. It's a corrupt system. I don't know what the answer is. I think it's actually a much more corrupt country than you think, because you just see people getting wealthy. They're trading stocks the day before something happened. It seems terribly corrupt. Listen, it's not my problem anymore. I'm not a U.S. citizen. I don't have to deal with it. So I quite frankly don't care. I believe in dual citizenship. I guess the politician should probably be held to a higher standard. But I, you know, I also think if you had someone like myself or some of our clients and they just got a second passport, but they still, we had a guy who actually ran for Senate. He was very earnest in running to run for Senate, but he wanted to have a backup plan. I don't think maybe that kind of guy should be stopped when he's going to represent the interests of Antigua and Barbuda. Yeah, you know, people immigrate from other countries. You can have as many citizenships you want as an American, but you're always considered an American for the tax. So it's not like you can open a bank account on a different passport. An American is an American is an American, no matter how many passports you have, but you can stack them up.
Did you say that you renounced yours then? You said you're not an American citizen anymore. Yeah. Did you just say, I'm done, America, or what?
Yeah, in 2017, I gave it up.
What is that? What's that process look like, and how do they get you on the way out the door?
What was very unpleasant during the pandemic, and by the way, my reason was, you know, I've always wanted to do this. My father came home when I was 13. He read the foreign earned income exclusion. If you have a business, you have a job overseas, it was like $64,000. I said, that's terrible that this country, when you don't even live here, would tax you. He said, well, you can make 64 grand. I said, I want to make more than 64 grand. So I always kind of, and I remember saying, maybe I'll give up my citizenship then. And I had the idea throughout my life. And so finally, I just thought the right series of events happened where I said, this is going to get worse and there may not be a time. There may not be time to wait. And by the way, during the pandemic, if you wanted to renounce, back when crypto was going through the roof, for like a year and a half, most embassies were closed. We found one in Chad. We found one in Armenia. There were like seven. I was just looking through the notes. And we have a back-end system called Minerva. We have all the notes about all the embassies. There were like seven. And like you had to find, you know, it was tough. And so they made it really hard to give it up. And imagine, so to answer your second question, if you've got over $2 million in assets, or if you've had a very high federal income tax obligation, or if you're not in tax compliance, and they can prove that, you're subject to an exit tax. All your unrealized capital gains get whacked at the normal rate. So we've had people that, you know, their company's worth $400 million and they have a stake, but they don't have the cash to get out. They can't renounce. You know, it's going to double again. They literally can't afford to renounce. So what I was telling people is, whether you're an American looking to give up citizenship or whether you're from anywhere else and you just want to leave the country and give up your tax status, the time to do it was when Bitcoin was at 20 grand. And you would have saved the delta on that 20. Maybe you would have had a capital loss for some people. But, you know, from 20 to 70, that whole thing potentially would be taxable as additional capital gains if you give up your U.S. citizenship. In some calculation, if you go to Puerto Rico, or if you're not an American and you were to leave the tax farm. So if you have under $2 million, you're generally in good shape. What was scary was they didn't even give you the chance to renounce very easily for a couple of years. You think they couldn't make that much worse? That was the pandemic being used as an excuse for, you can't conduct one of the most fundamental human rights that even the United Nations has, as you should be able to do this. And they stood behind a chicken-ass excuse of there's a pandemic when the embassies conducted other business, but you can't renounce your citizenship. It costs $2,350, which whatever, but there are people who can't afford it. People in Canada who have middle income jobs, and they're just being screwed because they have U.S. citizenship. It costs $2,350. You go into two appointments. I will say for all of that, the people who did mine were some of the most extraordinary professionals I've seen in the government. Empathetic, kind, helpful. Nothing bad to say about my own experience, but a lot of bad things to say about how the government weaponizes this. If you're under $2 million, or if you're at a break-even point right now, that's always the time, or a capital loss, that's always the time you want to get out of whatever country you're in for tax purposes, because otherwise they're going to hand you a bill and say, you lived here when you earned this, and since we can't get it from you later, just pay us now. You want to sell some of your crypto to pay the bill, or do you want to get out earlier? I think the getting out earlier is better.
Wow. So where did you end up getting citizenships?
I don't talk about them all, but I have about five citizenships. I might get an extra one or two. I mean, the ones I've talked about is primarily St. Lucia, which has a citizenship program. They're the only one right now that's not seemingly going to raise their price by double. Because
actually, just so you know, I just heard from my contact. I did St. Kitts, and the same people that helped me do that said that that St. Lucia is getting ready to double. And
they might have come around today, but I mean, it's going to be expensive.
Yeah,
it's going to be $200,000, which, you know, you guys can afford it. I can afford it, and that's fine. We were actually looking at getting it for a couple of employees who could have benefited from it. And it's like $100,000. Okay, $200,000. Yeah, so I guess they buckled. That's very new, but it's scary times. And I've been telling people for years, this stuff is going to get more expensive. And people say, well, Bitcoin will go up just a little bit more. I say, guys, you have to take a couple percentage points of your assets off the table. I don't care if you're in crypto. I don't care if you're in whatever. Anyone who has wealth, right, has to take a couple percentage points off the table and have some insurance. People have trusts. I think you should have an offshore trust filled with some offshore assets, not just onshore assets and an offshore trust. That doesn't really work. You should have a trust if you have enough money. Maybe you have a holding company to hold some of your assets, and maybe that protects you in certain tax circumstances. You should have a residence permit. You should have a passport. You should probably have another place to go. Maybe you own a home. Maybe the home gets you the residence permit or the passport. You know, I get it. We all want to keep every dollar working for us or every Bitcoin working for us. But you got to have, once you get to a certain level, some insurance. That's the price of success. I do it. You know how much money I spend calling lawyers and asking the stupidest questions ever that I'm 98% sure of? That's the price of having a certain amount of wealth. Like, you can't afford to make mistakes. And the same thing goes here. So it's going to be more expensive. I've been telling people for years, you want to be prepared. And what I feel comfortable is in my five passports, you know, I didn't always have a reason to get them, but I saw how each of them fit into the portfolio. And I said, this may come in handy one day. I haven't predicted every single thing that's happened, but really nothing terrible has happened to my passport portfolio. I have some that have gotten better. You can go to new countries. I can pretty much go everywhere an American go, minus five or six countries, plus one or two that they can't. And I just think you want to be prepared. And you have to just keep in mind insurance. Mm. You have to have an insurance policy. If you've got 10 million bucks, you should. If it becomes 200 grand, I'm sorry. But you should just do it.
Yeah. So let me ask this. So in your new Safe Havens report, you know, you were talking about the culture and the economy of the West. You see it's declining. We can all see that it's declining if you take off the rose-colored glasses. And it does seem like, you know, Asia's on the come up, right? A lot of stuff's popping over there. You'd also mentioned that there's some places in Eastern Europe that are thriving. So, you know, what are maybe, and you mentioned Mexico. So maybe what are some of the more promising markets that you see today for business and investments and maybe even living overseas?
Well, they're all different. I mean, let's just take Asia, for example. I have a home in Kuala Lumpur. It's where we host our event, Nomad Capitalist Live. We're doing a 4-day event this September where we're going to talk about a lot of this stuff in detail for four days.
In September, you mentioned?
September 25th through 28th.
Nice. I might want to try to get out there to that, matter of fact, because there's a couple of crypto events that's popping. Korea, Singapore, Bali, Philippines, and then that would be right after all of that. So that might be a great time. Maybe I'll come out there to that.
We have a great party. It's nomadcapitalist.com/live. We've got some of the people, you know, Safe Dynamo has been there. You know, Max Kaiser was there before. We have the CEO of AirAsia. We've got a lot of, you know, people who are very like-minded about what we're doing. It's not all crypto. But it's a lot about taxes and freedom and really, you know, opportunities. We're talking about emerging markets. We're talking about all the stuff you need to know about how to be a nomad capitalist. But I own a home there. Do I think it's a good investment? No. For $500,000, I get a penthouse that's about 3,500 square feet. I love it. People treat me very well there. It's extremely affordable to live. I just sent a friend recommendations. You can have lunch for $3, or you can have an amazing omakase sushi right outside my door for $60 at the sushi counter. So I just love the place, everything but the time zone. Do I think it's a great place to invest in property, even though it's really cheap? I don't know, eventually, sure. But the currency is a little soft. Just not an investment, but it's a lifestyle place. If I live there if I live there year round, I could still do it in a very, very tax friendly way. And if I don't live there year round, then I don't have to deal with it at all. I get access to a bank account just to diversify some cash if I want that. But next door in Singapore, that's where I'm going to, have my major investment accounts. It's just so much more competitive. Any kind of liquidity I want to hold, any kind of investments, they have deeper dive investments into Asia. So if you like, I have an Indonesia fund. It's outperformed what you would get on the U.S. stock market because it's more locally managed. They get it more locally. Same with my India fund has outperformed some of the U.S. ETFs. And if I want to invest, in frontier markets, I'm a big investor, well, I'm a medium-sized investor, I suppose, in Cambodia, big believer in Cambodia, have been for many years. And I think that's the growth market. I think Nepal coming up could be interesting. I think Bangladesh could be interesting. I think we've given up on Mongolia. That's old school, many years ago. So that's like in Asia. Mexico is a good place to live because it's free. You can work towards citizenship, something you can't generally do in Asia. So if you just live in Europe or Latin America, you can work your way towards citizenship for free. Obviously, the taxes are a consideration. So Latin America doesn't have as many tax-friendly countries, but it has some. Uruguay, for example, is way down there. If you're worried about chaos in the world, they're pretty tax-friendly for 11 years. Eastern Europe, I think they have the spirit of freedom. I've been a big defender of Georgia. I have Georgians who work for me. I have a soft spot for the country. It just feels homey, very tax-friendly, 0 to 1% for most foreigners. And then even, where I'm at here in Ireland, I get it. It's more Western. But you know what? If someone wants a soft landing, it's not a NATO country. They don't go around bossing everybody around. People are pretty laid back. Everyone I've seen in the government tries to help you. Stuff gets processed efficiently. We had a thing. Someone got a residence permit. They made a mistake and they denied the guy. They wrote back. You got an apology and an approval within 36 hours.
Wow, that's fast. They still have their issue with their fellow countrymen to the north, though. That's really interesting that is so embedded in their culture, the conflict with Northern
You
Ireland.
wouldn't see that though. I mean, I if you're in Dublin, I don't know. It's like something. It's not like it's not like you're in the Ukrainian border or something. I'm never going to try and claim I understand as well as people who've lived there their entire life how that works. I think it's a pretty safe and stable place. Is it the best place? I don't know. Listen, I decided that I'm enjoying spending some time here after well over a dozen years being entirely in emerging markets. Like, you know what? It's nice. You order from Amazon, something gets delivered. You order a sweater, they bring it to your door. People speak English. Everyone's pretty cheerful. That's a nice place to have in the mix. And I might, after all the years of doing that and going a little bit stir crazy at times, being in places where it was hard to be understood sometimes, or they were a little brusque. I thought, hey, throw that one in the mix. And so the answer is, it's what do you want? We have people who go to Italy and they spend 100,000 euros flat tax. Now, you may think Italy has crazy taxes, and they do. But if you haven't lived there before, you can pay 100,000 euros flat tax and you can earn all the money you want. Greece has a similar program. Switzerland has a similar program. Am I a big fan of that? I don't know. But guess what? If I had to choose between Irish and American citizenship from a tax perspective, from a perception perspective, I'd take Irish citizenship all day long. And if you live in Ireland for 5 years, you can get it. And then you have the chance to dump your American passport. You don't have to pay the 200 grand for citizenship by investment if you don't want to, as long as you don't need it along the way. I mean, so there's so many different ways to look at this, right? Do I want to be a nomad? Do I want to live in Malaysia? Do I want to live in, there's so many permutations, is my point.
What about in Ireland? I was reading about this recently. Actually, I saw a video of downtown Dublin, and there was lots of migrants there that have come in. And so there's like it's overflowing with migrants at this time. Is that something that you're seeing firsthand?
Maybe I'm an elitist on this issue. I'm pro-immigration. I'm pro-talented immigration. I'm pro-immigration financial, like golden visas, people who start businesses, people who bring capital, people who are extremely smart. We had, somebody from our team in Georgia move to Ireland who's extremely smart, and it's a good opportunity for them to get a better passport eventually and serve the company better. I'm very pro that. The idea of Ireland for Irish or any country for their people. When you have some of the highest, I think by some metrics, the highest wages in the world, you're going to need that. You can't have everybody working at Meta making 200,000 euros a year. And no one wants to work at a pub, but they want to go to a pub. Well, how do you solve it? Well, you have to bring in a lot of Brazilian girls, right? And you're in a thing called the European Union, which I'm not saying I'm the biggest fan of, but it's benefited Ireland in terms of being able to be the headquarters for all these European companies that they couldn't be if they weren't in it. So I get that maybe they don't agree with all the regulations, but they're kind of stuck, and it's brought them tremendous prosperity. That, I mean, look at this place in the 80s. It was a mess. 40 years on, they did something that worked. It wasn't perfect in all the regards that we'd like from a liberty perspective. Are there migrants? You know, I'm on the south side. So if you look at Dublin, every city is divided by a river, pretty much. You know, the south side's where it's at. There's a different attitude. I guess on the north side, you have that. You have some hooligans, and you did see one outburst of that last year. You have some hooliganism for sure. People looking just to cause chaos. I guess that happens anywhere. And yeah, there are some migrants. I think the country has kind of turned against, like, Ukraine, for example, because they were giving them way too much money at a time when there's a housing crisis in the country. You don't even want to know what I paid. You know, so I get that, like, let's take care of our citizens first when there's a housing crisis. I get there's maybe some decisions that people would have liked to be made better. I get there's some people that probably don't belong. But, you know, I think it's, listen, I spent a lot of time living in poor countries or up and coming countries, and people criticize that. And I would say, listen, Kuala Lumpur, yeah, there's parts that aren't that nice, but it's better than a lot of U.S. cities. And the part where I live is spectacular. Mm-hmm. We all live in our own neighborhood, right? I live in a beautiful neighborhood, on par with anywhere. So now, you know, I mentioned a country that's wealthier, again, some of the highest salaries in the world. Well, that's going to attract a certain amount of that. You know, I think that things are improving in terms of, you know, how the government's taking care of it, you know, from the citizens' perspective. But that's a choice you have to make. I mean, I don't think anywhere is perfect, but I thought, you know, for me to live in my own little cocoon in a nice area, to talk to people who speak English with very wealthy people who speak English, which they don't in Malaysia, right? That's a good thing to have in the portfolio. And I think if you diversify that to where you have options and you're not always in one place, that's the lifestyle I like. And you can kind of lever up and lever down in each place based on what's happening.
Do you have a family now, or are you a single guy, just nomadic?
No, I'm not saying, but you know, no kids. I just met a guy in Bogota, was there for a couple of weeks, and he has five kids now. He's going to be speaking at an event about exactly how he does this and how he homeschools them all with his wife, and how they make friends. They don't even have like homes. I bought homes in like seven cities just because I like it. I've done business there. I want to be prepared. They stay in hotels sometimes, and they're doing it as a family of seven. So I don't know that that's an excuse. Now, you may not like his exact lifestyle, but again, if I'm taking some money off the table as an insurance policy, I think the first thing I might do is find where can I buy properties around the world that gives me residence or citizenship. And I'm going to spend my time in those places. And as long as one's tax friendly, in case I have to be there all year, in case one is more freedom, in case some crazy event happens and I need a place to go, I think it's not a bad place to deploy some capital.
That is real nomading right there. What that dude is doing with his family. That is crazy.
That is crazy. Let me ask you this. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of Ancestry.com or 23andMe, just because they're, I mean, I think who owns that data. And so my girlfriend's Russian. So I actually used a Russian version of that and typed in my name as Vladimir Putin. And but it turns out that I am mostly Viking, and the Viking went through Ireland and Scotland, right? Yep. And then I got some Germanic and Belgium and a little bit of French and a little bit of Italian and a little bit of Spanish. Now, is there any sort of genetic, you know, things that say, because I got like a nice percentage of Irish in me, right? And so Then without being able to go through the lineage and saying, oh, well, your great-great-granddad, whatever, I want to know, with the potato famine. And, you know, I can't track it all the way back because my biological father was bad dude. And so I'm not able to go back that lineage and check all that stuff out. But through DNA, it could. Yeah. So is there a way that you know of that you can say, hey, I'm Irish. Is there some Irish love I can get for a passport, mate?
Yeah. So citizenship by descent, it's the one a la carte service we actually offer. We mostly make plans, but for people who just want to get that passport, we do it. I tried for close to a decade to get my Lithuanian citizenship because I have ancestry from different places, but none of them are close enough. Mm. They generally are within, you know, some are just one. So are your parents from there? Some are two, like in Ireland, or your grandparents from there, unless there's a very rare exception where they can be three. some like Italian are, as long as Italy existed in its current form. That was my problem in Lithuania. Hey, they left 2 years before it was Lithuania, and they're very particular about that. And that would have been a cool identity. And then, like the UK, and that, well, that's like basically one or sometimes two. So every country, set how many generations back you can go. I believe it was Slovakia that opened it up back to like four generations recently. Sometimes you have to have an unbroken chain, though. So if, like, let's say your Italian great grandfather moved and then naturalized before your grandfather or grandmother was born, back in a time when dual citizenship wasn't really a thing, then that, it wouldn't have passed down to the next person. Therefore, the chain has been broken. So sometimes you have to look at that. But yeah, I mean, the DNA test, I guess, can tell you where to look. But I mean, really, the family tree and the document trail is what's going to work, not showing a blood sample.
Right.
You got to get your documents in line, Sir Lord Travis. You can't just be walking into the country and say, "Line me up at the pub with a pint, mate."
I'm going to bring my Viking sword and I'll have a talk with him.
So let's get the crystal ball out here, Andrew. And I know that, nobody knows for sure what's going to happen, but you look at trends, you see what's happening. And the America that we are part of now is definitely, we all pine for the good old days, right? It's like when men were men and women were women. And when illegals didn't just flow across the border by the millions, where do you see the United States going? Is there a chance to turn this around, or are we going to become, are we going to continue to go down in the rankings?
What's interesting is what you mentioned, is you go to a lot of the countries and people say, oh, there'll be nowhere to go. It's all the same. That's, to me, a coping tactic. Either people went to the UK on vacation and saw the same thing that they do in the US. Yeah, they're pretty similar. Or they just sit at home and they cope because they know they will never do this. They're afraid to do it. And therefore, there's nowhere better. You go to Serbia, you go to Montenegro, you see if men aren't men. And you know what? I learned a lot about that because I grew up in the US. And I like to dress much the way I like to dress now. I'd wear a scarf. People would drive in the street and shout slurs at me for wearing a scarf. And you realized, oh, the German girls, they come up to you, I love the scarf. And that's like the opening.
They hit
Everyone
up on
else
you.
is.
I'm like, I'm going to meet myself a nice German lady. Yeah.
What's a
Yeah.
scarf?
So, I mean, like, you go to like the Balkans, for example, or Georgia. I mean, people are still, men are still men. And what you learn is men are not afraid to do whatever they want. I got in a taxi once in Montenegro, the biggest, most strapping guy. He's totally in control. He's married to this beautiful, like, supermodel wife, because they're all very beautiful there. The guy's huge. The guy's wearing a pink polo shirt that barely fits. And he's listening to, like, whatever the Montenegrin Selena is. And nobody ever questions like that he's masculine at all, because and this whole thing of what's masculine, like even when I was growing up in the US, like, if you wear a pink shirt, it's like, what do you like? To me, it's like, how about masculine is I do whatever the hell I want, and I'm not worried about it, I'm not self-conscious about it. So there's a lot of places that you can go to solve that. I get the US is more instrumental in the world than many other places, but I push back on this thing. If the US collapses, it's totally over. It's like, no, it just means that things change as they have throughout the entirety of human history. And for me, I don't like to spend a lot of time prognosticating about how bad it's going to be, because what I think or what I want is irrelevant. It's going to be. And I think people don't like that. Like, you're giving up. I'm not going to put my finger in the dam. That's not going to solve the problem. I mean, the world reserve currency share is down from 71 to 55 since the turn of the century. That's not a collapse overnight, but as my father says, change happens at the margins. You cut in a few points of homeownership during a great recession, things collapse. You raise unemployment by 5%, 10%, you got a real problem. During the Great Depression, 100% of people weren't unemployed. It's like 25%. So you have these marginal changes, which over time cause a problem. Here's what I think is the biggest issue that actually impacts people today, because I get it. If the US has problems, that'll ripple. But a lot of that stuff will move around the world. Other countries become more significant. It's already happening. It's already changing. The countries that are growing the fastest, you don't even think about. And you kind of poo-poo on them. It's like, no, that's where the money's going. But, I The biggest thing for me is, what is a government that is so used to being in power since the fall of the Soviet Union? I guess now, you know, China is more of a threat. But since the fall of the Soviet Union until not that long ago, they were kind of the only ones. What do you think they do when their share of the world economy, when their share of their ability to go and boss people around, what do they do? Do they just say, you know, nothing lasts forever. Let's ride peacefully into the night. Of course not. It's going to be nasty. They're going to come after you for money. They're going to come try and take your stuff. They're going to impose all kinds of regulations. They're going to shut you out of deals. This whole TikTok thing, I said this years ago when Trump tried it, it bothers me. If I'm an American business person, which thank goodness I no longer am, which countries are going to stop me from doing business there? I just hired 6 people in business development to open up a new business offline, not through our YouTube, not through our online presence, offline in 6 different parts of the world. What if because, oh, your company has an American UBO, ultimate beneficial owner, you're not allowed to come and do business here. We don't want your business. And what if that means I lose them? Oh, but you should be patriotic. Listen. You know, my parents did something for me. Some teachers did something for me. People I grew up around, like individuals did something. What did the United States as a country do for me? Oh, there's no wars. Well, you're fighting all of them. Sure, there's no wars on your soil. Same for dozens and dozens and hundreds of places around the world. Like, it's not unique. I'm glad I was born in a place where I could be successful. I didn't have to worry about fending for food, or I didn't have to worry about, you know, Patrick Bet-Davids in a refugee camp. By the way, the guy still became successful. So I just think the biggest threat is fighting what they're going to try and do to people when they no longer get power. And all you have to do is first what they're doing to everybody else. Sanctions are up fourfold since the turn of the century, almost. Are there 4 times more nasty people than there were? I would say there's fewer bad actors in the world than there were at the turn of the century. That's the mark of an empire that's in decline, that wants to hold on to its power by sanctioning everybody else. And look what happened with the Russian sanctions. They wanted secondary sanctions where, oh, Kyrgyzstan, you're going to do the trading for them. India, you're buying the stuff. You're all bad. You're all sanctioned. They realized it would hit them in the end. It couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. They probably could have done it some number of years ago. They don't have the power anymore.
That just powered up the whole BRICS economy then, right? They're like, okay, well, guess what? Oh, we don't need SWIFT. We're going to go ahead and use UnionPay with China, and we're going to go do an end around. So it was actually a very dumb scenario. But maybe let's end this on a personal note, right? So you've been all around. You've been to some really cool places. So maybe what are some of your maybe favorite discoveries or experiences or places that you've been during this journey as a global citizen? Like, how has this changed your perspective on things?
Well, there's places where things are different. There's places where things are inefficient. One of them is Puerto Rico, which we talked about. I mean, some of those Caribbean countries probably not very efficient. I learned a lot about what's important to me. Efficiency is important. One of the things I've been focused on more recent years is kindness is important. So Malaysia, or where I just was in Colombia, extremely kind people. Ireland, maybe more polite people, but still compared to most of continental Europe. I mean, I was in Munich about a year ago. People were just walking on the street, running into you. I was like, it's such a wealthy place. So many people, I've never had so many people run into me and nobody says anything. So kindness, or at least politeness, should be optimized for. Or in Georgia, I talked about, you know, hospitality. That's a form of kindness. Maybe not great service, but hospitality. So that's
important. The Philippines, by the way.
Yeah, the people in the Philippines. I mean, Southeast Asia in general, I think, is pretty. Malaysia, Philippines, those kind of
so polite. Like, oh my God, they're like, "Hello, sir. Hello, man." Like, just like, whoa, that's that celebration instead of the having lived in Puerto Rico where they tolerate the gringos versus being in the Philippines where they celebrate the gringos. It's you're right. This is right on that with that kindness.
And well, I think that they're just nice people. You know, you go to Malaysia. Malaysia is quote unquote a Muslim country. So is Turkey. I have a house in Istanbul. You walk around my neighborhood, you see gay people everywhere and people are kissing and it's all kind of, nobody cares. I mean, there's an Alabama of every place, right?
And that's quotable right there. There's an Alabama.
So in Malaysia, here's a discussion everybody had. We had someone come to our event last year who is, I guess, lesbian. And they're like, I'm afraid. What's going to happen to me? And they, I said, it'll be fine. Just come to the event. And they came, they were talking to people. They said, you know, the Malays, the Muslims in Malaysia, we practice our religion. We do what we think our God wants to do. And you have your own God and you do what you're supposed to do. And we don't judge you and we don't bother you. That includes if you're Malaysian Chinese. You see these girls walking at the mall with the shorts that are like 2 inches long. If you're Malaysian Indian, you're not our problem. We don't, and certainly a foreigner, you do what you want. You dress how you want. You act how you want. If you go to our religious sites or our government buildings, maybe put on some pants. Yeah. But when you're just going around, you know, we're not here to tell you what to do. And to me, that infuses, that culture gets infused. I didn't go to Malaysia many years ago because it's tax friendly. I didn't even know it was immigration friendly, but it is. And I think that culture kind of infuses things. Look at the culture that's in the US. People are at each other's throats. You have to report everything. There's endless forms. We're moving some of our stuff out of the US. I know they had this crypto thing, which was at one point paused, this reporting thing. So much nonsense from a country that wants to maintain its power. And so I think optimizing for those things is very important. I probably spend a little bit too much time in Eastern Europe. I do think it's a place for freedom. We had one of our team members go there from Ireland, and he said, this is a good place. I'd like to go to hunt and be left alone. If I wanted to make friends with a lot of people, I wouldn't come here. If I wanted to be free, do my hunting, be left alone, pay low taxes, I would love to come to Eastern Europe. So, you know, there's a place for everybody. I like to have multiple bases so I can go to Colombia for a couple of weeks a year and get that vibe, which I love. And I've got friends there. Not my main vibe. My main vibe, I suppose, was always Malaysia. We'll see if it becomes increasingly here where I'm at now. But I think, again, what you want to do is have different options that you can lever them up and down. There's a pandemic and Asia is a problem. You lever that one down until it's over. And I did that. So I just think it's constantly changing. And I think what you really want to go is find places where you feel it. When I got out of the taxi in Bangkok for my first month there, this is many years ago, I instantly didn't feel it. And I've never felt it. And I went back for a friend's wedding 2 years ago and I said, all right, I don't hate it, but I still don't feel it. You have to feel it. I'm in Kuala Lumpur because I got out. I feel it. I like it. It's a bit more.
Bangkok is a different beast, though. I mean, you get into some of those islands in Thailand, like Koh Samui.
Sure.
Well, I felt it there. I did not feel it in Bangkok. The traffic was horrible. I didn't like Bangkok at all. Love some of the islands there. So, yeah.
I don't think that special massage you went to see in Thailand was feeling.
No, I actually got zero because I was with my girl when I was there. But thank you for that.
So, you know, Bitcoin, of course, is just the ethos of Bitcoin is all about freedom and liberty and self-sovereignty and all that. So I know that plays a role in what you teach. But, you know, how bullish are you for the long term that no matter what the U.S. does, that Bitcoin is here to stay as an asset class and that crypto and blockchain are just going to move forward?
Well, I think it does move forward. I mean, my concern is, and again, I'll mention what my father told me. We were on the internet in 1994. We had Prodigy Internet, and we were talking to people because he was looking at potentially leaving the U.S. back then. He didn't because of the family. So if you're single or if you're married without kids, maybe you set this up before you have the kids and you build this into your lifestyle. But anyway, we were talking how libertarian it was back then in the internet. He said, this is not going to last forever because once you have mass adoption, the public is not libertarian. I think that those of us who are more freedom-oriented, we like to delude ourselves into like, no, 70% of Canadians don't want like higher taxes. Yes, they do. You just don't know them. Like the average person wants something that you don't if you're in favor of freedom. The average person follows. The average person's afraid. The average person believes whatever they hear. They don't trust business. Somehow they think that Justin Trudeau or Biden or even Trump is out to help them. And your average person is not going to agree with you. So you have to go to a place where you have it. I think that Bitcoin and crypto continues to do well. I know he's not a fan of Bitcoin. I take a Warren Buffett style approach. When I'm buying something, it's what will this be in 50 years? I have a fund of the Don't Be Poor fund that has a number of different, you know, liquidity things, including some crypto. But I look at crypto as a bit more of a risk on asset. But I look at it as 50 years from now, where is this going to be? I think it's a very bright future for it, unless I wouldn't own it. I don't know what it'll be tomorrow or next week or next month. I hope it stays strong for April 15th because we're launching tickets to Nomad Capitalist Live and we're going to be taking your crypto and I want to sell it out. But my only concern is if I'm in a country that is challenged by that, I don't care if there's one senator from Wyoming who's in favor. That's nice. Clap, clap, clap. You know, that person's not in the mainstream. You know, Ted Cruz is not in the mainstream. I don't think they're going to save it. Ron DeSantis is not going to save it. I think you want to be in a place that's very agnostic, that doesn't have a culture of wanting to take power and dominating people's lives. You know, St. Lucia kind of being the opposite of the U.S. I don't think they want to do anything to anybody. But my concern also is just what happens is you get more people in there and they're going to call for more regulation. I mean, I got into this in 2014 in January, and it was like, what KYC, right? The more people that get into it, they want KYC because they're like, what? I have to remember, you know, I remember these words. Like, I can't just go to the bank and ask them to reset my password. I think people, you know, the average person doesn't want that.
Mm-hmm.
The slave mentality, you know, it took me until my 50s to finally go to fully be awake to the fact that we have no choice in, you know, our parents or where we're born or, you know, the government that is surrounding us. And yet everybody's telling us what to do and how to live. And that's insane. Like, our rights are given to us by God to be who we want to be and live how we want to live. Yet all of this stuff is superimposed on us. So it sounds to me like what you've done is go, you know what, to the degree that I can push back against that, that's what I'm going to do.
I my first business was in the radio business. I had a broadcasting, kind of an ad agency, let's call it. And we had a lot of AM radio stations. We made, you know, healthy margins because we worked with stations that were on the verge of going bankrupt or that really needed money. AM radio, what are they? They're mostly talk radio stations. And I would get invited, hey, come to our event with Bill O'Reilly or Laura Ingraham or whatever. And I just realized after years of hanging out there, how many people were like retired and they were angrier than ever because the system wasn't going their way. And it was the same, you know, 20 years ago, same thing, illegal immigration, this, that. I think illegal immigration maybe sounds like it's worse now. I don't watch the news there, but it sounds like maybe it's worse. Or the economics for the average person have gotten bad enough that that more people care about it. Where now it's impacting them. Now their jobs being infected, you know, impacted. They haven't made any more money than 2004. They're not keeping up with inflation. So maybe now it's just more agitating as there's an equilibrium in the world with the people I hire in Georgia, the country, versus there, and you know, their wages aren't keeping up. But I just I just see it going in the in the wrong direction. And I just, you know, I don't want to be angry. I've been angrier at points in my life, and there's frustrations of living in different places, which I've tried to optimize over the years. We help our clients figure that out by doing a lot of deep dive kind of analytics on the person, not just the strategic goals. I just think when you're committed to this has to work and I'm going to save it, maybe if you live, let's just keep going back to St. Lucia, 176,000 people, something like that, your voice counts for more. How many votes are going to be cast for president this year? 150, 160 million? I'm sorry to tell you. And I know that, like, we libertarian types, we don't like to hear this. We entrepreneur types don't like to hear this. You're nobody and you don't matter. You don't matter. And most people don't think like you. And when I was sitting in Turkey and I woke up early to watch Barack Obama get reelected, hey, Obama's second term, he did a few things that I actually like as kind of a internationally minded guy, like with Cuba, what have you. But I said to myself, I don't want to vote only for my own self-interest, but I'm going to get stomped on the rest of my life because the tide is turned against people like me. And that's I had registered the domain name Nomad Capitalist. And I'm like, I'm starting it immediately. And this is going to be something that's big. And I think people didn't realize it then, but they're realizing it now. You're not going to change people. You're not going to change society. Just go where the society already agrees with you and be happy, except for the fact that I've learned from the talk radio business that some of these people, the worst thing that ever happened to them when they would have to be happy. Don't be that
That's
person.
Full circle right there, Trav, because he just answered how he started Nomad Capitalist, which was the first question. We got there.
That was beautiful. Yeah, Andrew, I want to say thank you. You know, I tell you what, you're doing some great stuff for folks out there. And so where would you like people to get started? You have nomadcapitalist.com. Where else can people connect with you online?
Well, the big thing right now is we're launching the Nomad Capitalist Live event. It's the fourth one we've done in a row. We've done seven total. It's a big show. It's not like a trade show. There's no sponsors. It's just people that I think you should hear about from all aspects, including entrepreneurs. I mean, Tony Fernandez at AirAsia took 26 cents and turned it into billions. The government screwed it up. He took over the airline. They did something amazing. So you're going to hear about that. You're going to hear about all the stuff we talk about, nomadcapitalist.com/live. I wrote a book called Nomad Capitalist. If you just want to kind of get everything aggregated into one kind of story of what's possible. And then we have a website with articles. We have a YouTube channel with 2,600 videos, with an R&D channel with about 200 videos hosted by my colleagues. We put a lot of information out there. You can just consume it. And we work with people with $1 million and more who want to be a client and kind of figure out a holistic plan, not just a passport, but they want someone to tell them all their options, not just the three options that some guy has to sell. And we do that. So, you know, it's the event, it's the book, it's the free materials. And when you're ready, it is, you know, the client services.
Let's take the red pill, folks. When you're ready, you will know. Andrew, thanks again. Nomadcapitalist.com. We appreciate you, good sir.
My pleasure.
It's really amazing to me, Travis, how people in power like to lord it over others, some to the extreme, like Kim Jong, you know, Il and Eric. Is it Kim Jong Un is the son, right? Il was the father. He was Il. And
oh, they're both Il to me.
His son is Unin. I was watching a documentary on North Korea on YouTube, and it's just crazy there, the amount of propaganda that they pipe in. They make it look like everybody in the West is starving, like, and that they have it so well because their fearless leader takes care of them over there. So
we are the opposite of starving, North Korea. If any of you guys are tuning in, most of us are very fat. Actually, I saw a funny meme. It was the statue of David. It said it was a fat statue of David. He was all obese now. And it says, this is 3 years after living in America and then going back to Italy. So he's really, I was like, oh my God, I finally have the physique of the statue of David.
This is good. We have a real problem here, and it's like they can't put, you know, two and two together. It's just the amount of stupidity, sheer stupidity in our world today is staggering to me. You know,
I wonder if it's stupidity or if it's actually, you know, malevolence, because it's like, it's not, we're not in that. We don't have a healthcare system. We have a sick care system. Right. Right. And it's like, and they start you off, hey, here's a bunch of chemicals into you. I don't care if you like vaccines or not. I think some of them are probably pretty good when you get going. But when you get born, it's like, hey, we're chopping off a part of your dick. And here's a whole bunch of chemicals for you. And over the next 6 months, you need lots of chemicals. Boom. And then here, eat this shitty processed food your whole life until you get sick. Then we can start feeding you these pharmaceutical medicines until you slowly die. Because they rarely ever do they heal you, because if they heal you, then that's a lost customer, right? It is. So it's like just a slow drip to death, really.
Well, this is just one of many reasons that you need to be thinking about where it is you want to live and how you want to live your life. And we're grateful to Andrew for Nomad Capitalist. You know, I actually discovered him after I discovered Simon Black at sovereignman.com, which Simon was a pen name. His name is James something or other. He sold out to Peter Schiff. Schiff now owns Sovereign Man. Now it's Schiff Sovereign. And of course,
So he's like, I want to be so sovereign. I don't even want y'all to know anything about me. I'm out, bitches.
Yeah. So now, but we know who he is. His real name is out there now. And I tried to get him on the show and couldn't hear from them. And then I discovered Andrew. And I'm like,
dude, you were sending me all kinds of great Sovereign Man PDF. You're like, dude, look at this. Look. And that was part of the reasoning behind moving to Puerto Rico when the time came, because you were starting to do some of that research. And then we started to meet some other people in Puerto Rico. And it was like, look at you now, Mr. Rico.
It all made sense. It all made a lot of sense. So you guys figure out for yourself where being treated best, you know, what that means for you. Check out nomadcapitalist.com. And meanwhile, the crypto markets go up, crypto markets go down. We saw Bitcoin.
I was going to say this. That's true. It's at a $2.7 trillion market cap right now. Bitcoin is at 68.7. Ethereum about 3,500. So that's where we are. Timestamp here on 4/9, day after the big eclipse. Dude, you know what's really crazy? Like BNB, even with CZ gone down, $576. Solana, even with FTX and SBF gone down, $175. Like, it's crazy. And now I was watching this one dude named Wisdom Bites. He's like a British dude, and he's got a nice little discussion. He's like, so if you like charting, check him out on YouTube. But he was talking about, like, boom, with the thing that just happened with Bitcoin, like, that was a big indicator. Like, in every other previous bull run, it looks like, okay, it's about time to go to the moon.
Well, we're just, you know, how many days from the halving right now? Like 12, 13, 14 days from the halving.
Next episode. Yeah, we should do it. We'll do the next episode. And then after that, we'll have the halving episode where we're talking about all the things around that. So that's coming up.
We'll do the pre-halving.
We're going to do about one show a week, right?
Let's the pre-halving episode. We'll cut that episode in half. We'll just, you'll get half the content. And it'll
we should totally do that. Like, right in the middle, just cut it off. And then be like, part two. Here it is.
There's the other half.
You get two episodes.
And there's only one of us.
Two of the price of one. The next halving, I go away. I just go into the abyss. I don't know what's going to happen. It's gonna be weird.
You're no longer a reward for the people. Hey, we appreciate everybody listening as we approach this next event in the world of Bitcoin. It happens once every 4 years. We're here for it, and we're excited about this bull run taking place, and we are glad that you're along with us for the ride. Once again, there is only one law in the Republic of Bad Cryptopia, and really it's more of a suggestion than a law, because it's not like anybody's going to come arrest you. We're not going to send our police force out.
Which,
you know, I don't even know who that would be.
We don't have the bad down. The bad down.
We have to rent a cop, you know, to come and slap the cuffs on you. But that suggestion is that you stay bad. The Bad Crypto Podcast is a production of Bad Crypto LLC. The content of the show, the videos, and the website is provided for educational, informational, and entertainment purposes only. It's not intended to be and does not constitute financial, investment, or trading advice of any kind. You shouldn't make any decisions as to finances, investing, trading, or anything else based on this information without undertaking independent due diligence and consultation with a professional financial advisor. Please understand that the trading of Bitcoins and alternative cryptocurrencies have potential risks involved. Anyone wishing to invest in any of the currencies or tokens mentioned on this podcast should first seek their own independent professional financial advisor.
And join the Badao.
And the Badao. The Badonkadonk?
Badao! Badao! Badao!
What the hell is that?
It's a good sound effect. Check out our Badao!
So it's like a bad decentralized autonomous organization.
Yeah, a badal. It's a badal.